Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. And today I am joined by Tracy Payne. Welcome.
Hello, great to be here.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tracy Payne. I am I'm a mum of a blended family of four amazing kids. And I empower women with safe and powerful spaces. It's super, super important to me. I'm so passionate about empowering women to feel confident, to feel safe, and to go after, you know, everything that they want. And for me, it stems from my childhood. I was abused as a child. I was in every way you can possibly imagine. And for, you know, I spent years in that environment and then ended up in the care system and coming out of the care system at 18 with no parents, no support, no community, no self-confidence, no self-belief. And I know that if I'd had all of the things then that I have now, when I try and install in women now, the choices that I had, the decisions that I made and the paths that I went down would have been so incredibly, incredibly different. So I'm just passionate about changing that and changing that for girls and women moving forwards.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot at the moment with the National Inquiry at the moment with the grooming scandals. And there was a lot of children, a lot of young girls that were from the care system that were caught up in that. Come across anything like that along your journey in the care system?
I think you are so incredibly vulnerable in care. Certainly, you know, for myself, being in care and coming from that kind of emotional, physical and sexual abuse background, the girl that I was so vulnerable and so open to, I guess, so many things that could have, I mean, I didn't come across that myself in my experience in that, but I know that the girl and the woman that came out of the care system didn't have any boundaries. I didn't know what boundaries were. I didn't know how to say no to things because I'd never had any of that installed in me, you know, coming through that and being abused as a child. And then when you go into the care system, it's very much about managing that child's behavior, taking care of the basic level of, are they fed? Are they sheltered? You know, have they got a roof over their head? But it's just that kind of top layer level of care. What they don't do is support you in understanding what's happened to you, building that belief, building those boundaries, giving you, I guess, what you would hope and expect that you got growing up in a regular home from your parents and in your family. You would expect to, certainly what I do with my children and my daughters and my son, you teach them those boundaries. You teach them what to say no to. You teach them what's right and what's wrong, and you look out for those signs. That doesn't exist. It didn't exist for me. I mean, I'm 50 now. I was in care when I went into care when I was 12. That didn't exist for me back then. There was none of that support package in place. So, and I know it's only got worse. So it doesn't surprise me that this is what's happening.
Yeah. And the thing is, the social system is, and I'm in the process of putting emails together actually to reach out to local authorities, because they're not trauma informed, because the thing is, risk evaluation requires a multitude of skills, unfortunately, and they're skills that they unfortunately don't have, and they're not taught within their degree. So they can make decisions. So they end up removing children from an environment. I mean, obviously, with what you experienced, with your parents was very different. But they can remove children for what they perceive as neglect and not being cared for very well because the children are acting out and X, Y, and Z, but they're not looking at the why. Why are they like this? Is the parent struggling themselves? Does the parent need a little bit more of an emotional crutch to actually guide them and guide them through this dark tunnel to a bit of light to start to come through the storm? But
Because removing
instead,
the children isn't always the right answer.
it's not the answer, no, a lot of the time, because in a lot of cases, as you've just rightly said, what they can be moving children from a home for, they're not going to be getting in the care system either. So you're actually taking them more from one frying pan into and dropping them into another frying pan. There's no nurturing, like you said, they're giving them the core basics: food, water, a roof over their head, maybe forcing them to go to school. But after that, it's like, well, now you're left to your own devices. And in many cases, I mean, obviously there's a new case, isn't there, where devastatingly a teacher who was a foster carer raped a 13-month-old baby and ended up killing the baby. So they're not vetting their own care or their own foster carers. If you're going to remove a child from an environment that you're deeming as not safe, you have a duty to risk evaluate more so the people that you are trusting with these children.
I mean, when we came into care, that I've got three other siblings that I grew up with then, and we were all separated. So not only, yes, we absolutely needed to be taken out of the environment we were in, 100%. I have no doubts. It was horrific. But when you've then removed a children from that environment, and we already know they're not going to get that nurturing and support that they need going into the care system, they then take away the only support network that they know. And they separated all of us. I since I was 12 years old, I have never lived with those siblings ever again.
And that's
We were
devastating.
shattered, and we all went off into different homes and foster parents. And I remember one of the foster parents that I was placed in, and and it was I we were there were six foster children in this three-bedroom house, and they had their own child as well. And we were allocated an hour slot to go in and use the kitchen in the morning. All the cupboards were locked, and we'd have a key for our own cupboard. And I was 14 years old at this time. And in the evening, we had a roster where the ch foster children had to take it in turns to cook for the other foster children. And by cook, I mean this was a deep fat fryer and an oven and oven chips or whatever went in the dish. None of us had any experience of, we ranged from sort of 13 to 17 years old. And then the kitchen was locked again an hour later, and we were allowed in our bedroom and in the kitchen and the bathroom. We weren't allowed in the lounge. That was for the family and their child. And it was like rent a room. And at 16, I was in a bed and breakfast with exactly the same experience. My board was paid, I had a roof over my head, and I was given £3.50 a week allowance, and I was expected to adult myself. And with all that past trauma and having missed out on those years of nurturing, and then you're left to go out into the world, and they wonder why the crime rate is higher and the mental health rate is higher and the re-abuse rate is higher. I'm proud of the fact that it stopped with me. That abuse stopped with me, and I'm so proud of that. And the family I have is so incredible and what I would have wanted to have growing up, but that's not the case for everybody.
I mean, but you're lucky, I mean, not that I mean, I grew up in a war zone as well. Everybody's not going to develop that awareness that we've developed, and without that awareness, you can't break that cycle. The cycle's going to keep continuing, and this is where the care system are going very, very, very wrong. They need to be, if you're going to, rem I mean, if, like in your case where you have had siblings, the best thing that they could have done, then children need
They
consistency.
should have kept us together.
Exactly. Yeah, because there's already abandonment wounds there. Why would you compound those abandonment wounds? Like saying right now, you've got nobody in this
Got
world.
no, they lit, there was no reason. They take away every support that you have.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That's not trauma informed. It's not
No,
trauma
no.
informed. No,
And I don't know that that's changed.
I very much doubt it has changed.
It's crazy, because it does. And me and my siblings, we have reconnected, and we talk about that. We talk about, we all went down these different pathways, and that didn't need to have happened.
No, and there's no reason for it. There's no
No.
reason for it. But on top of that, they need to be teaching. If they're going to remove children from a dangerous environment, they need teaching and coaching as to why that was dangerous,
Yeah.
why that was on an unhealthy environment, so that they don't repeat that cycle. Because particularly the older the child is, they'll have taken on coping mechanisms. They'll have learned that certain behaviours is normal in society, and this is why we have in the world today children going into school with knives. They're taking them into school because either they don't feel safe or because they want to dominate
Yeah.
and take control of an environment where they feel like they have no
They have no
control.
control. Yeah.
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 So they're going about everything all the wrong way. And all they're doing is just adding fuel to that fire, and they don't see what they're doing. It's like this education and well-being bill. That in my eyes is a recipe for disaster. So their intention is to safeguard children. If we can see them, we can better identify any risks. That I guess, but you first need to get your own affairs in order and make sure that the environment that you're putting these children in is
Is
safe.
better than what they're coming from.
Yeah,
Right.
and at the moment it's not. It's
Yeah.
not.
And
So
we know that when you first take children away, I know that when I was first removed, and it was I when you said earlier about, being forced to go to school, I remember very clearly that day when we were removed, and we were literally given 20 minutes to pack our belongings into two carrier bags. And we talk about, this carrier bag system with children that are in care, and it was literally, what can you fit in two carrier bags? And I remember what that felt like, to be removed in that situation and then being taken to a children's home and waking up that next morning in this little bedroom and not knowing where I was, and then being told that I had to go to school, and my whole world was absolutely shaken up, and I can still feel those feelings now. And if they'd turned around to me at that point and said, "Do you want to go home?" I would have gone home. As awful as that environment was at that moment in time, I would have gone home, because it's all I knew.
yeah.
And that, although I wasn't safe, I felt safer there than I felt being in care. That changed in time, and I got to know my surroundings. But so, if they're removing children from these environments and putting them into somewhere else, there has to be some trauma-informed
Yeah.
provision there. They're not understanding what the emotions are and what children are feeling, and they're stripping them of everything.
Well, it's in some ways it is a bereavement. It's a grieving process. They're
Absolutely.
grieving the loss of a life that they has been ripped away from them.
Only ever known. Yeah.
And then so it's like somebody losing a loved one, and then saying, right, okay, now you need to go to work,
Yeah, just go, you just go to work or go to school like the normal.
and pretend like nothing's happened. It's
Yeah.
absolutely, and this is where they don't understand grief and trauma. And grief and trauma are two different things. You can experience trauma, symptoms of trauma, and it can be compounded with grief
Yeah.
because you're
Yeah.
grieving the life that you should have had, the
Yes.
life that you thought that you were meant for.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
is a grieving process,
Yeah.
and all they're doing is compounding that problem.
And then you go into the care system and you have to learn a whole new way of living, not only day-to-day routines. I was in a children's home for 18 months, and you're living suddenly with 22 other children. A whole new way of living, a whole new way of having to manage your day and the people that are there. And the other children around you that are dealing with all of their own experiences and traumas as well. And you're suddenly in an environment where there's lots of things kicking off and all these things happening around you and all of these things going on. So there's so much for you to be thinking about and managing and dealing with.
Yeah, but even in when you were in a foster when you were with a family, you
Yeah.
were still treated like an outsider,
Yeah.
like you didn't
Yeah.
belong. You weren't treated like you were a part of the family,
Yeah.
and that is not the whole idea of you. If you are a foster carer, you are taking that child in under your wing,
Yeah.
and you are nurturing them.
Yeah.
So they should be.
Yeah.
That's not the experience that you had at all.
No. And I had a variety of different foster placements, and the answer was always, oh, it's because you're a teenager. We only place you with short-term placements and different things. And then I eventually ended up in a longer-term foster placement. Which came with its own traumas and interesting stories, and that was kind of the last placement that I ended up with before, going into a bed and breakfast and coming out of the care system at 18. If I think now of my children, and they're 20, 23, and 24, but if I think of them at 16 and imagine them in a bed and breakfast and having to make all the life decisions that they, making, and where are they going to study and what do they want to do, and the type of person that they're becoming and their dreams and hopes and aspirations and all of the things that we talk about as a family here. None of that existed for me. None of that existed. And there's so much missing that needs to be there.
And this is exactly why, if they are going to remove, they have to, when they remove a child, they have to truly, truly know that that is in the child's best interest,
Yeah.
because sometimes removing the child isn't in the best interest. Sometimes it's better to give the family more support.
Support, yeah.
And not have them fear the system, which is what a lot of families do. They fear the system. They will hide problems and struggles because they're fearful of what they're likely to
The
say, do,
children
or
being
think.
removed or
And it goes back to that uncertainty. Uncertainty for the brain represents more danger
Yes.
than the even physical abuse that you're
Yeah.
experiencing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, they are caught that fe they're, because they're creating that uncertainty with families,
They won't reach out
co
for
they're
help.
compounding that problem within the home, unfortunately, and they may not even be involved at that stage, but because they're seen as a unpredictable entity,
Yes.
even
Yeah.
without involvement, they're still impacting the psychology of a family and
Yeah.
how they're responding and showing up with together. So when you remove a child from that environment and you put them into an equally unpredictable environment, Have you really helped? No, you haven't. You think you have. You think you have because you think, well, okay, so you've got a parent that's on capacity overload. Maybe they're, they're not getting up out of bed. Maybe they're not taking the kids to school. Maybe they're just drowning. They're just drowning. And they're just going through the motions, and that's being deemed out. Maybe they've lashed out in retaliation to something, and they've jumped to the wrong conclusion. So, but instead of like doing a proper risk assessment and thought, right, okay, so what is really is behind this? What is behind it? Okay, let's get you some help. Let's get you some support. Because unfortunately, in a situation like that, removing that child and putting them into a situation like you were in, you've removed them from one frying pan to another frying pan.
Another,
And you think you've helped, but you haven't helped. If there is things like sexual abuse going on, of course you need to remove children. It needs to be done in the most, they more so need more nurturing because you need to repair the damage that's being caused. Unfortunately for their brain, that war zone represents greater safety than the environment that you're plonking them into.
Absolutely. And there's none of that support. There wasn't for us, there wasn't any support in place. So the girl and the woman that came out of the care system didn't have any of those boundaries, didn't have any of that understanding. And it was only my own personal development journey as I, grew up and started the different careers and businesses I've done. It was only that personal development journey that has helped me to become the confident woman that I am today, living the life I live today. Without that, it would be a very, very different story.
And that's what they need to be teaching these children that they are removing. They need to be helping them to, and even if they don't end up removing them, they still need to, these children need to be taught how to regulate because their nervous system's conditioned for firefighting. We wonder why children are reacting.
And it doesn't. I mean, I still, as an adult now, and actually, interestingly enough, I was just having a conversation with my hubby to be. I get married next year, and we were sat talking about something this morning, and I was saying to him that, this was triggering me at the moment. It was a financial thing, and I was explaining to him why it was triggering me. But I'm able to now, because of all the work I've done on myself, and recognize what and things will trigger me, whether it's financial. Generally for me, it tends to be when something feels out of my control, or I feel like somebody's trying to take control of something for me. My natural response is to create havoc and fight, and I know where that comes from, and I know that I can still do that. But I've done enough work on myself to be able to, most of the time, because it is only most of the time, to be able to recognize and actually step back a bit and go, actually, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm feeling, and I know this is where it's coming from, and I know I need to choose a different response. But it's hard work, isn't it? It's not it it's always in a work.
But you need tools. That's what you need. You need tools. Those tools need to be taught, and learnt. And the odd, a small percentage of people like me and you. I know we both know Nicola Noel as well. Nick's the same. We have had. Found that fire in our belly ourselves and thought, no, this isn't gonna, this is ending with me. Now I need to navigate my way through the storm and find the resources myself. But not everybody has that, can find that little glimmer, that little seed and water it. Not everybody can get that. And that's why obviously I do this show because it only takes one story that really hits with somebody and they're like, right. There's hope. Now I can, okay, I just need to take one little step. And that one little step moves on to another step and another step and another step. But unless somebody's given that initial seed,
It has to come from somewhere, doesn't it? It
Come from
has to
somewhere.
come from somewhere, whether it's a podcast like yours, whether it's picking up a book, whether it's hearing, like you say, it's hearing a story. And it's why I share mine, and I share mine very, very openly in all that I do, because people have to hear our stories. They have to know that your past does not have to define your future. You can change anything. You can turn anything that's happened to you into something positive and powerful. And we have to keep sharing these stories. We have to keep showing the way and helping others to overcome that as well.
Because it inspires people then to move forward and do something and take that next step. And this is what the system should be encouraging our younger generation to do. If we want to break the cycle that we're seeing currently, that's the only way. We need to educate and show them the way. It's the only way.
And we're seeing so much of it, aren't we? I mean, I see in my role as a self-defense coach with Strike Back, we see it with so many girls that are lacking in confidence, lacking in confidence, lacking in that awareness of boundaries, that are getting caught up in relationships beyond their years, beyond their level of maturity and emotional maturity. I look at some of them and I think, gosh, they just want to see grow up and gallop along in life, and they're babies, and it's scary, what we see out there and the things that are happening. And we have to educate, and we have to help girls and women to take back that power and that confidence, to be able to walk safely, to walk with confidence, to have that aura of, I feel good. That posture, that strength is so important.
We're just going to break for a short interval and we shall see you after the break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Is this the year you're going to sort out your health goals? Never heard of frequency medicine, but willing to give it a try? Curious to discover there is a way to click your way to optimal health? At BioHealthScan, we found a way for you to recover your lost good health faster than conventional methods, in a safe and pain-free way. Join in with the rest of us and try our 21-day challenge for optimal health. Do it yourself. Save ourselves today. Find your way to biohealth-scan.com/21-day-challenge. Or, for a whopping 20% discount, click on the BioHealth Scan 21-Day Challenge DIY SOS banner on the UK Health Radio homepage now. BioHealth Scan, paving the way to manage your health a better way.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. So, before the break, Tracy touched on obviously her self-defense with Strike Back. And Self-defense is really, really important. I mean, last week actually, I did an episode with Gemma Smith and Wes Cunliffe, and we spoke about the. It's a case, a couple of years ago, a few years ago now, but it was in the press because of she'd have, her appeal had been rejected again. And it's Martina Ogonoska. I can never, I don't even know if I've said her name right. She's a young, was a young Polish girl. And she experienced, she had a lot of trauma. She has a lot of complex trauma. Grew up in a home where there's domestic abuse. Left Poland when she was very young, entered the British school system and got. Other people will call it bullying. I will call it abused by peers in school. And of course, all that will have had left its mark. Absolutely, it would have. And then to compound that, at 14, she allegedly got sexually assaulted. She's saying she got raped. But apparently there was no evidence of that, and the gentleman in question was cleared. What she was definitely was groomed, because this was an older man, obviously. Now, all that trauma is her reasoning for going out when she leaves the house home with a knife. And I think we spoke about this, didn't we, before we booked you in. And you know, that is, I mean, if anybody's not listened to the episode, listen to the episode, because I broke that down in quite a lot of detail with Gemma and Wes. But there's another way. There is another way. We cannot, there's no, nothing justifies us going out with a weapon and putting other people in danger, particularly if you've got complex trauma, even more so, because unfortunately, our judgment can be off. The way we can read things can be skewed,
Absolutely.
when we have complex trauma. All it would take is for somebody to put their hand on your shoulder, and if you've been sexually abused or assaulted or raped when you were younger, that because of how the brain operates, that even going to towards you towards that direction, you can think they're going to touch your breast, and actually, they may not have been because of the way the perioctal gray responds. If you've got a weapon on you and you're holding it, the perioctal gray gets alerted, gets triggered. That's you can react, and it's too late. So, self-defense, Tracy.
It's a big one, isn't it?
It is. It's necessary. It's important, particularly if you have been, sexually assaulted, you have got complex trauma, you have been physically abused, certainly as a child. It is, for me, I think, crucial, crucial, because we need to learn how to. This is not about not keeping yourself safe. This is not what I am saying at all. But there's a right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And there's a reason why it's a criminal offence in itself to go out in public with a bladed weapon or any weapon at all. So what would you say in terms of self-defence?
I mean, self-defense at its core is it isn't about being able to fight. It isn't about being able to get in there and cause someone harm. It is about escaping. It is about getting away and getting yourself to safety. And a lot of what we teach at Strike Back is raising your awareness. It's very much coming from a place of empowerment. Self-defense isn't about living in fear. It is about coming from a place of empowerment, knowing that you can protect yourself if you need to, but knowing that you are aware and alert, because the body language that you give off is a massive clue to a potential threat. If somebody was looking for somebody, to attack. And there were two types of people out there. And one of them was, you know, had headphones in, was had their head in their phone, and the body language was closed. And then somebody else just had that posture. You know, they knew that they were aware, they were alert, they knew what was going on around them. Who's going to be the most vulnerable? And it comes down to things like that. So what we teach is having that awareness, knowing what's going on around you from a place of empowerment. If you're going into a room, being aware of what's around you, where's the door? If I needed to get myself out, where am I putting myself? You know, not letting yourself get, you know, put into corners. It's having all of those things. It's having the posture. It's being able to, one of the biggest tools that you have at your disposal is your voice. Being able to use your voice. And one of the things that we hear a lot is, you know, women will say, what do you do if, you know, you needed to use your voice? Well, I'd scream. Scream is one of the worst things you can do, because, you know, we hear people screaming all the time. We've got children all around us in different gardens. They're always screaming. We tune out of screamings. We teach women to use their voice and to use words, getting someone to back off, asking for help, you know, using that voice and alerting people. Because what an attacker wants is they want it to be easy.
Yeah.
They don't want you to use your voice. They don't want you to alert to danger. So a lot of what we do is teaching that. It's knowing, you know, what you can do, what you can't do, and being able to de-escalate. We can de-escalate a lot of situations. And then if needed, then we will teach physical skills. But easy principles, because we know in the moment, if you are feeling that you are under attack, all of the, you know, routines and things that get taught will go out of the window. You have to be able to build basic muscle memory of simple principles that you can bring in and use. So it's having those conversations. And we are women only instructors, and we only teach women and girls because the conversations are different. It is a safe space. And every woman, and I say every woman that I have spoken to when I've been out and about or talking to friends and mentioning strike back, everyone's got some story. Everyone's had some kind of experience, whether it's an inappropriate comment made, whether it's some kind of sexual innuendo at work. We're hearing about girls on buses and people sitting next to them and feeling that it's okay to put their hand on their thigh. We're having so many conversations with women and girls where they, in the moment, they froze. They just didn't know what to do. And that's what we have to change, to have those conversations, to call this out, to give them the voice and give them the confidence and the awareness to be able to de-escalate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, without, obviously this was way before I even trained in what I'm trained in, let alone come across Gully and her world.
Yes.
But when my ex-husband threatened me with knives, it was prior to him doing that, just before he did that, he had me backed into a corner. And he had raised his fist to go and punch me. And I was petrified. He could see the fear in my face. I had nowhere to go. He grabbed a glass and he threw it against the wall in my direction with such force, it smashed a Brita kettle into three parts. And it literally missed me by inches. So, of course, I was in fight flight then.
Yeah.
What were you doing? What were you doing? No, you know, what would people think if you, because obviously he'd always been coercive controlling and always used fear-induced compliance, but he'd never gone to that extent. And he's like, nobody will believe you. And it was that in that moment, unfortunately, this is why I always say to people, always have, fortunately, I had my phone in my jeans pocket.
Yeah.
Fortunately. And that's why I always say to people, is never back yourself into a corner. Never have your, because you can't escape. There's nowhere to go. You can't back away. You're stuck. And always wear something with pockets so you can keep your phone on you or your key and your keys if you need to escape quickly. And because obviously I was challenging him and I told him that, you know, he was like, oh, you think you're the big I am? Well, we'll see you as a big. And that's when he got up and I thought, what's he doing? I could hear him like rattling about in the cutlery. And I'm like, what's he doing? I go through and I thought, you know what? Right, this time you said nobody will believe me. Oh, I'll make sure I'm believed. And I went through with record pressed as I'm walking through. And he was coming at me with knives, and I had my back towards a door, so I was backing away as he was coming towards me. I was using my voice, because I was like, oh, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to stab me? So because I was initiating a response from him. It interrupted whatever was going through his mind.
Yeah.
So, and I was continuing to back away, the closer I got towards, when he realized I was recording as well, he hid the knives behind his back. And then as I got to the door, I opened the front door and he threw them behind the door then, because he was fearful that somebody was going to see.
Yep.
Now, it was because I was talking to him and using my voice, obviously in a stern and firm way.
That confidence.
It interrupted and I was able to back away at the same time. Yeah. So I did that without, you know, instinctively.
Yeah.
But that was because I'd been backed into a corner literally half an hour before that.
Yeah.
But you need to do that automatically. You cannot have yourself at any point, even if it's not, if nothing's erupting, you with a perpetrator, it can erupt at any point. Don't ever get yourself into a position where you are backed into a corner. Not ever.
You want to be able to escape. That's what we're doing.
And it's not about
fine.
It's not about being hysterical. It's not about screaming, because that's not going to do anything, like you say. But if you talk to and confuse them and get them into a conversation, even if it's like a heated conversation, which it obviously will be, you're interrupting something, particularly if you've got space between you. There isn't the space for them to react and hit out at you. So if you're moving backwards all the time,
always backing away,
yeah.
looking to back away and have that boundary and that, you know, that space between you.
Yeah. 100%. But say I did that, you know, instinctively, fortunately, and that probably saved me.
Yeah.
That probably saved me, because our daughter wasn't there at that point. She was at school. I was on my own. It could have ended very, very differently.
Yeah. There's a lot of work out there to do. And, you know, we are doing a lot of work now and raising awareness in, you know, in schools and going into different places of work. There's so many places and communities and charities and people out there that need us to come in and train and work with their women and work with their girls, because we empower the women. And, you know, the first thing I wanted to do when I became an instructor was teach that to my girls.
Yeah.
And we pass it down, you know, we pass that legacy down, and we want mums to be teaching this to their daughters and to their nieces and their sisters and their friends. And we want an empowered community of women and girls out there that can protect themselves.
So we're just going to break for another interval, and we shall see you after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So just to wrap up, before we wrap up, what pearls of wisdom would you give to anybody who's gone through what you've gone through, had the start in life that you have? Mm. What would your advice be to the system and to individuals as well?
Yeah, I think for me, I think the biggest thing that I want those women or girls who listen to this to know is that your past doesn't define you. The biggest one is find that community, build that community around you, have those people around you that support you, that champion you, that encourage you and help you to go on and achieve everything that you want to achieve. You know, dream big, believe that you can absolutely do anything. You know, you use everything that's happened to you to empower you to go out and make a difference and make that abuse, make that trauma, make it all stop with you. Be the person that draws the line in the sand and goes on and makes a difference, and you know, and look out for those other women that you can be a cheerleader for as well. Community is so important to me. Be that cheerleader for other women. Go out there and support them and champion them as well, and get yourself booked onto a self-defense course with Strike Back, definitely.
And if they don't feel safe going out, what would you say? So if somebody's in a situation like Martina was, where she felt that, well, I don't feel safe going out, somebody might become a risk to me, what would you say to that?
You've got to reach out for support. You have to reach out and get some support with changing that for you, because you can feel safe going out again, and it's doing that inner work to make that difference there, and recognizing what those triggers are for you, and not doing anything to put yourself in further danger, like carrying knives and things with you. Put those things away and recognize that they are triggers. Most people do not go out with a knife in their pocket. There is something triggering that. Recognize that, own that, and go and seek help and support to change that, because you should and you can go out and feel safe. And we need to make sure that everyone has the support to be able to live life like that, confidently and purposefully and safely.
Yeah, because even if the weapon does make you feel safer going out, it's actually not making it's not safe for you at all. It's not safe for you or anybody else.
No,
because it really, you know, you could find yourself behind bars, and ultimately that's going to cause you more trauma. So if you have trauma now, you'll have a lot more trauma if you end up being punished as a result of having that trauma and responding and reacting the way that you are. It's not the answer. And it's not us not understanding. We absolutely do understand, but there is there's a better way.
There's other ways to make yourself feel safe, and we can help with that. There are other ways for you to live that empowered life and to feel safe.
Yeah, I mean, there's apps like HollyGuard as well, you know, which is some forces do pay for it for victims that are high risk of stalking. I know Cheshire do use it because I've known somebody who's been given it. But yeah, I do know they do work with other forces as well. But you don't need a police force to give you this. You can actually go online and get it yourself. There's a free version, and obviously the free version is a little bit more restrictive. But again, if you were to need help, it would notify your a person that you put in as a contact immediately. Whereas the paid version actually goes to a call centre who can actually then notify the police of your location. So there's things that you can do, you know, it is if you need to feel physically safer, there's things like that.
There's tools out there.
Yeah, there is. You know, we don't want to be going out with any knives or any weapons. Yeah. Well, thank you, Tracy. It's been great having you on.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm sure we'll get Tracy on again. Maybe we can do an episode with Nicola.
Yes, now that would be fun. Anything could happen then.
Yeah. Well, watch this space. We might end up getting Nick on it. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specialising in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.